bring the committee to order. It's 10 o'clock, and it's 10 o'clock to go by the satellite up in the sky somewhere. And I want to welcome you all to the Bioscience and Emerging Technologies Committee. Everyone seems to be taking their seat, so I want to thank you all for being here today. And I'm going to take a minute here so that we can all kind of introduce ourselves and the staff can introduce themselves and kind of their role, where they represent and for the representatives, and if they want to speak to why they decided to request this committee, and the staff, what their names are, where their offices are, how to get a hold of them. So with that, why don't we start over there on my right, Mr. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ryan Winkler. I represent District 44B, which is St. Louis Park and Golden Valley, or a portion of both those cities. And my interest in the committee is the long-term economic needs of Minnesota and the economic competitiveness, I think, issues that we need to address at the legislature. And this is a growth industry for Minnesota, a very competitive industry nationwide and worldwide, and I think it's great that we have a committee that's going to address those issues specifically.
Well, good morning, and my name is Representative Julie Bunn from District 56A. It extends from the South Hill of Stillwater down to Woodbury and along 11 different communities along the St. Croix River. And basically, I'm interested in this. I have a background in economics. I'm interested for the economic growth reasons that have been indicated, but also my background in environmental resource areas. And want to bring that together in this committee, as we know, a very more important area in terms of pushing these industries forward. Also, I'm very interested in the healthcare area, and that also dovetails with what we'll be talking about during this committee in moving the state forward. So all my interests, economic growth and development, healthcare, and also environment and resources, come together in this work. So very much looking forward to what we're going to accomplish through this process. Thank you.
We're doing some introductions of who we are and where we represent.
Paul Thiessen, South Minneapolis and Richfield.
Representative Mahoney, guests and members. My name is Kim Norton. I represent Rochester, and I'm vice chair of this committee. I'm here because of the natural links to my community, being the home of Mayo Clinic and IBM. I too see this committee as really leading in the future of the state of Minnesota, taking us forward 20, 30 years out, and I think there'll be many exciting presentations and opportunities for us to deal with, including biodiesel and renewable fuels and a variety of other areas that I'm very interested in. So, thank you.
And I'll let the staff introduce themselves after we're done. And my name is Representative Mahoney, Tim Mahoney. I represent the northeast quadrant of the city of St. Paul. This has been a special interest of mine the last 6 or 7 years, and Representative Winkler could not have said it better. This is really, to me, an engine of growth and jobs in the state of Minnesota over the next 20, 30 years, and I want to make sure that we are positioned correctly to take full advantage of everything that this technology and the biosciences can offer to the state. So I'm looking forward to moving this agenda forward. Mary?
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. If you go back far enough in my career, I actually was a biology and math major and a biology and math teacher. So I spent 6 years getting a four-year degree. And then I taught those subjects for 7 years. So I do have some interest. As you say, this is an interest to all of the states of Minnesota, but St. Cloud, we sometimes think of ourselves as a very poor Rochester or Minneapolis area. We also have medical and lots of colleges and an agricultural flair that is going to be tied very closely to some of these projects and issues.
I'm John Burns. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am in District 33B, which is Western Suburbs. I live in Wayzata, and I feel very privileged to be assigned to your committee, Mr. Chair. I had a chance over the past 4 years to work on Governor Plenty's staff and learn from him how important bioscience and high-tech industry is in Minnesota. And in a small way, I got to work on a couple things with him in that area and help him put together the Rochester Higher Ed Development Committee. And I understand how important that industry is to our state. I appreciate being here. I was not a science major, actually, for only about one semester. So. But I have a very strong interest in this area.
I'm just going to stay there until I pass. You know, what are you going to do?
Well, I'd also like to inform people that there are three other Republicans on the committee. Representative Ruth and Representative Beard and Representative Pepin are not able to be here today. I think they are on a field trip with one of the other committees. So we'll give them equal time at the next committee hearing. And Representative Mason is busy with another same kind of issue, I believe. And I will allow our staff to introduce themselves, and we'll start on my right here.
Hi, I'm Autumn Williams-Wessel. I'm Representative Mahoney's CLA. So my office is 591 right next to his office. Nice to be here. Thank you.
And I'm Joanna Dornfeld. I'm Representative Mahoney's committee administrator for this committee. And my office is in 476, kind of directly below Representative Mahoney's office.
And I'm Anita Newman. I am the health research analyst assigned to this committee, and I'm up on sixth floor.
And to take it one, some of the rules, my biggest guideline will be our cell phones should all be on silence in the committee. There's nothing more annoying for a committee member to have their cell phone go. Well, there is one thing more annoying, is to have one go off in the audience. Because we'll just have to stop the committee and tell you to answer it, and embarrassingly to no end. So please make sure your cell phones are on silent. I think in your packet there are some committee rules. I don't need to go over too many of them other than on the amendments. If it's going to be a substantial amendment, I don't know that we're going to have a tremendous amount of bills come through this committee. You should be able to get a chance to read them or have an amendment drafted if you choose to through the revisor. I'm not going to hold this to a 24-hour rule or anything like that. Minor amendments should be able to be made, and we should have discussions in committee. I do ask that you get a written copy of whatever you're going to try and do to a bill to the to Joanna, so that we don't have mistakes the next day in the minutes or in the bill as it moves forward. Food is just fine so long as it's for everyone. there's always the hall. And, yes, maybe for the lobbyists too if we're all feeling overly generous. And unless I'm missing something else, I'll let everyone read those guidelines as they care to, and we can discuss them at a later date if you have some concerns with them. We have in front of us today two of the organizations that are really tied into the bio industry and the technology industry, Life Science Alley and Bio Business Alliance. And the balance of the committee will be to hear from them today and what they do, what they envision the state moving forward towards, and how it affects the state, this particular industry. I would be remiss, though. I just noticed there are just a minute. Well, anyhow, why don't we call them to the witness table, and we will see where we end up. Don Gerhard, correct? Could you identify yourself for the tape? as my past chair used to say, so that 100 years from now people will know who was talking to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Don Gerhardt. I'm the CEO of Life Science Alley, and I'm going to move this chair because I can't see. And thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, representatives and committee members, for allowing us to participate with you today and provide you with some information that hopefully gives you some historical background on how we got to where we are, and then some forecasting information on where we think we need to go. So I'm going to be providing you with a lot of background information about the life science industry, how it took root, and then I'll be talking a little bit about the organization I run, Life Science Alley, and then we'll hand it over to Dale Wahlstrom, who is the chairman of the board of the Biobusiness Alliance, and he'll provide you a lot of data from which we're talking. So in your packets, in that Life Science Alley folder, on the right-hand side, there's a copy of the PowerPoints that we'll go through. And I think that I'll be moving through this relatively quickly, but I'll refer to the pages so you don't get lost. There's some other pieces of information in there. Some of the more interesting ones might be just of the list of the organizations that are members of Life Science Alley. So here we go. We start with a little animation to get to the first page. Life Science Alley is a 501c6 trade association. Attached to that trade association are an institute and a venture fund. The venture fund is not yet funded, but it is focused on early stage capitalization of early stage life science companies, a huge need in the state. So those are the three organizations, with the, in quotes, mother organization being the Life Science Alley. Life Science Alley's lineage comes out of the old medical alley that was constructed in 1984 for a whole number of reasons. And it was really a bipartisan effort, both from industry and the government, that built the trade association. It struggled for a couple of years, then Earl Bakken from Medtronic literally took it by its ears and helped it grow. MinBio was the trade association for the biotech side of the industry in the state, created in 1991. Those two organizations then merged in March of 2005 to become Life Science Alley, a broader-based organization that lives every day in the life sciences, the med tech world, through the biotech, bioscience, life science world. So what we want to impress upon you today is the absolute gem that we have here in Minnesota that needs a lot of attention to continue its success. We have enormous opportunity, and we have some very good things happening, but we need other things to happen. So the other parts, other geographies that we work with, we do a lot of networking with states and provinces around us, but our message is really focused, and most of our work is focused on Minnesota. I'm not going to give you a lecture at all about our broad-based economy. You know more about that probably than I do. At the same time, it is that broad-based economy that helps us move into the next steps of this bioscience industry. The top end is that agricultural and food is an enormous leverage point for us. The bottom one, medical and healthcare, those two really tie together in the message I'm bringing you today. The next one, the next slide, that quick business history and overview, I'm not going to spend much time other than focus just for a little bit on Northwest Airlines down in the bottom right-hand corner. We've had that wonderful cross-section of major companies in this state, but Northwest Airlines, without Northwest, this life science sector would not exist. The first opportunity to take market to Japan and to Europe from the central part of the United States came because Northwest Airlines was here. So all of these industries do interdigitate. They really do. So that's important for us to think about as we go through a lot of this information. So how do we measure up? Next slide. How do we measure up we have got some really neat measurements against the rest of the country and the rest of the world that are really important in supporting this sector that we're talking about. The health of the citizens is an indicator, but it's also a resource for us. You cannot think if you're not healthy. You cannot be creative if you're not healthy. So the health of our citizens and our typical one, number one to three, more recently number one and two, is one of the great reasons for us having this industry. Best state to live in. Somebody will say they're afraid they're going to get carried off by a mosquito or freeze to death. At the same time, once we get creative people here, they want to leave. It's not easy to get them here from other parts of the country or other parts of the world, but they do not want to leave. That's really important as we try to build the sector we're talking about. K-12 education has its ups and downs, but it typically rates very, very high in the United States. That's an absolute gem, and we need to make sure that continues to happen. A hidden one, where we rank nationally in software engineering. That is part of what laid over from the 1970s and 80s when we were so highly rated as one of the top software and hardware developers places in the world. We kept that sector, went away to Austin and Boston and other places, but a lot of those people, because it's a great place to stayed here. It has been an enormous help to our life science industry to have high-end software engineering here. That's just another example. We won't talk about the medical technology development. So inside this alley, inside this Minnesota alley, there are about 520 FDA-registered medical manufacturers in Minnesota. That number, somebody might say it's lower, somebody might say it's higher. It's in that range. This includes repackagers and other kinds of things that are defined as manufacturers by the federal government. So that's the best number that we can give you. It employs about 50,000 people. Some people might say fewer, some people might say more, but that's a good range. The average pay is about $65,000 a year, and that is just not for the top-end types. There is a broad range of technicians, of people that are laborers inside the industry, the construction workers that build the buildings for this industry. It's a broad range of employment, and Dale Wallstrom will have a lot more information to give you about that. The number of medical device patents in the United States is an interesting piece. Your paper doesn't have it with the U.S. This is the device patents filed in the United States. Minnesota is in the upper 10 in the world of medical technology patents and business patents. That's an indication of the creativity that we've got here and the technology capabilities. It's just a measurement for you to think about as we talk about the things today. Med technology companies by size in the United States. This is just to show you that the vast majority of employees that are working in the life science world, this is a med tech number, but it goes across the life science industry. The vast majority of these employees are in companies of under 100. So we think here our cluster is driven by Medtronic and Boston Scientific and 3M, et cetera. Yes, it is on the profile side and the big product side, but the employment is at least as large, if not larger, in Minnesota in companies of under 100. In fact, 70% of the people employed in the industry are in small companies. That's a real indication of the vitality of the industry, as well as the care we need to take in making sure both the large and small are vital. Here's a quick example. We all know about Medtronic, but it was over 50 years ago that it was a garage startup. A University of Minnesota doctor and an engineer, Earl Bakken, bumped into each other over the University of Minnesota, and the story goes on from there. But it was serendipitous that this doctor asked Earl Bakken, can you help me figure out how to impact a heartbeat with electrical impulse? What, you know, would you help me figure that out? Well, 50 years later, it is now an international scope organization. But down inside this, then, are just a quick example of how something like that levers to the rest of the state and the rest of the community. The two new major buildings going up Fridley? Is it Fridley? I'm sorry. Somebody correct me. Moundsview. I'm sorry. It's Moundsview. The jobs, the construction jobs, et cetera, that are going on because of the introduction of those two new buildings. At the same time, there have been around 157 spinoffs from Medtronic, from its employees, and from Medtronic in its history. That's a Harvard Business Review number that further help then hire those small company employees. Indications of the leverage that these companies provide for the state. The next page that is an interesting number. The 10 largest of those 520 manufacturers that we talk about produce about $18 billion worldwide in sales per year. So if you factor that through the remaining 510 or so, we figure we've got somewhere in the range of $40 to $50 billion generated by the life science bioscience community in the state of Minnesota each year. That's leverage. That's really important for us to remember. Situation for the region, really interesting numbers. The healthcare businesses are on the move. At the same time, this bullet point we kept because, as you saw just yesterday, the indication that Boston Scientific is going to lay off 500 to 600 people. We still think that those companies, those four largest out of that 500, are going to grow 5,000 to 10,000 new jobs in the next 5 to 7 years. So the health of the industry is extremely important to keep that hiring level, as well as don't forget those small companies that are spinning out, and Dale will be talking about some of the needs there. So the Midwest region and other areas are coming together to preserve what we've got here. Minnesota is a focal point in this life science world, especially in the med tech side and the bioscience side that Dale will be talking about. So we need to make sure that we've got our eye on preserving and growing that sector versus the loss of that mainframe and software kind of thing that happened not too long ago. And we can see some of the indicators happening right now if, in fact, 3M Pharmaceutical goes away, gets sold. We see Boston Scientific laying off 500 or 600 people. Now, that can be cyclical, but there are some early on indications that some of the same kinds of things could be happening. So it all comes down to three major things, a lot of detail under that. But one of the things I really want you to carry back with yourself is that these organizations, this kind of a sector, deals off of talent, capital, and technology. It has to have those three pieces, and this is the design that the Battelle organization has put together, that they cannot survive without talent, capital, and technology. And those different pieces you can read for yourself, but they are the components inside those three absolutely critical components. So life science and healthcare, we've got, in this state, we've got hundreds of spin-offs. We've talked about that. Minnesota, University of Minnesota, the Mayo Clinic, Medtronic, St. Jude, and 3M are all indicators and spawners of this vitality that we're talking about. I don't want, again, we put those spin-offs up in the top end because they are the ones that are hurting at the present time, that we really need to make sure that they've got somewhere to go so that they can grow the way they should. So this convergence, this biology and engineering, this is picture is tongue-in-cheek, but it's not tongue-in-cheek, too. Some people don't understand or don't feel that there's a real joining of biology and engineering. We think that's a General Motors cab that's being pulled by that ox. We don't know for sure. This was somewhere in Indonesia that the picture was taken. But it's a neat way to think about that the two need each other, and that as they combine, as they converge, some very special things are happening. The next is a very complicated slide. You don't need to spend a real lot of time on it now, but get in your in your context that we're now talking about medical device converging with bioscience, and that it does include the agricultural and chemical side of it all the way through drugs and pharmaceuticals, way over to the research and testing kinds of things. But this is the kind of context that we're talking to. So, the trends in medical technology, how it changed medical technology, or is changing it very quickly. Not too long ago, a lot of the med tech world was in that implantable electromechanical devices, for instance, at Medtronic or Boston Scientific. They now have to take into consideration all of those other ovals as they consider either product or hiring people or getting workforce or developing product for the next generation. All kinds of new things are involved that make it both more complicated as well as substantially a greater opportunity for an area like Minnesota. Here's just a quick example. This is one of my favorite examples. That bear is a bear that is participating with a very bright gentleman in his research, a guy named Tim Lasky from Medtronic. They're studying bears that are in hibernation, because bears in hibernation over their 4 or 4.5 months of hibernation only lose 20% of their muscle mass, both in their cardiac system and in their body, and can wake up in 5 seconds from that deep sleep. They feel very strongly that there's a lot of application from studying those bears in hibernation and bringing it into how we get treated or how they approach the care of our cardiac systems. I can tell you that he's been right in the sleeping area with the bears after they've sedated the bears, because I've sat next to him at a couple of board meetings when he still had the clothing on that he was in there with the bears. You don't want to do that. So what are we looking at down line? The future for treating the diseases. The top line that shows today, we are much more focused on treatment and diagnosis and then monitoring. If you go down to the second line of that, you're going to see a huge amount of effort in this convergence towards treatment, towards cure. Where cure is minimal above it, it is substantially more towards cure, and that will both be an opportunity as well as be a potential hindrance or potential difficulty as we move forward. So this organization that I run, I'm going to give you just a little bit of information about it, because we want to be sources of information for you during the legislative term and during the off-season, too. Our mission is enabling business success in the life science. So with the 500-plus member organizations that we serve, they employ about 250,000 people inside Minnesota. We have a broad range of healthcare, medical technology, and bioscience companies, as well as substantial infrastructure. So infrastructure companies are where those other jobs get built, whether it's in a legal firm or whether it's in a banking firm or whether it's in some other kind of educational organization. So MinSCU, University of Minnesota, Mayo Clinic, etc., are part of our membership. Let's go to that next slide, and you can see how our membership is spread out across the agricultural and industrial bio. That's the slide that's up right now, if you can catch up with me. It takes a broad cross-section like this to support a major sector. It just does. It's called infrastructure and or the things that spin out that help it. We have the best infrastructure in the world, in the medical technology world. It has been acclaimed that by many people. We need to make sure that we have the same kind of infrastructure for the full bioscience side also, and that is a challenge that we've got in front of us. But these are just examples of the member organizations that participate with us. So we do a lot of education and networking. We do about 60 or 70 seminars a year focused on the life sciences. We do a lot of networking, conferences. We're now the second largest state affiliate for the National Bio Organization. So we have a lot of impact nationally as we deal with national issues, too, that impact Minnesota. There's a whole number of things coming down line nationally that we're working with both legislators and regulators nationally that would impact Minnesota. We do a lot of government relations with our two lobbyists, Phil Griffin and Linda Sandvig. And we do other things like mini masters in med tech management with the University of St. Thomas. So we have a lot of activity going on. And Phil Griffin is going to come up and talk a little bit about our legislative agenda this year. If I may introduce Phil to you. There you go.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Phil Griffin. I am a contract lobbyist and do work on behalf of Life Science Alley and a half dozen other clients, and appreciate the opportunity to just give you a brief overview of our legislative agenda this morning. As you see in the slide before you, Life Science Alley is really concerned with trying to make sure that we have the ability to continue the growth that Mr. Gerhardt has outlined before you. And primary to that is the world of education. And so you will see us in the higher education and in the K-12, or now I guess I'm showing my age around here, P-12, that includes early childhood education, committees talking about the need for a workforce that is trained and educated. And this is really, really essential to the work that is going on. Without the scientists, without the physicians to do the research work, you don't have the companies that we are talking about developing in this state. Without college educations, you don't get those scientists. Without technical people, you don't get the workers that can actually do the molding, do the creation of these devices, or do the bioscience engineering that needs to be done. Without high school educations coming into those college situations or technical schools, you don't have the background, and it goes down to the elementary school, and it goes down to pre-K and making sure that people are prepared. We can't stress strongly enough how much the education system feeds what goes on in this world. And it's something that we're very proud of in Minnesota, but it's something that we need to be very, very careful in making sure that we move forward quickly to stay up with the latest technologies so that our students are coming out trained. Because we are no longer, as you all know, competing with Wisconsin and Iowa and South and North Dakota. The kind of work that goes on is being done across the globe, and those are the kinds of people that we're competing with. The second area that we work on at the legislature is to talk about what's going on in research. And the research world, you've seen us supporting for the past few years a number of efforts that have been going on, including the joint venture between the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota, the Translational Research Facility of the University of Minnesota. These are also essential pieces in terms of moving forward with what is going to be our strong economy in Minnesota in the future. The work in research also needs to be backed up by some commercialization, though. Strict research without moving it towards commercialization doesn't help, and it's very important that we continue to concentrate on those efforts, both within our academic institutions and elsewhere. The third area that I just would caution you on is to do no harm. It's the old adage that comes out of medicine, but it applies to the life sciences and applies to the work that is going on in bio these days as well. You have the opportunity to have legislation come before you that can have a great deal of impact upon our members. Some of those pieces of legislation will be brought to you for reasons of trying to control the costs of health care. Some of them will be brought to you for environmental reasons. Some of them will be brought to you for reasons that we don't understand. But we would ask you to look very cautiously at legislation that you pass so that Minnesota doesn't become a leader in passing legislation that would harm what is going on in the industry that, we are trying to grow and have grown here in the state. These include things like price supports, things like looking at what we're going to do with genetically modified organisms as we move forward in the agriculture and bio worlds. Not that there aren't good ideas out there and things that we need to look at very cautiously, but to be the first one in front and be a national leader, we think would bring harm. We had legislation on recall devices here last year that we strongly opposed, and those are the kinds of things that we want to make sure, and with the help of a number of members of the committee, I think we explained to the legislature that there is a safety net in place and a regulatory scheme that takes care of those problems, and we hope that that's the system that we'll use. Last but not least, we had asked for your support in economic development. The kinds of companies that Don was describing that grow up here in Minnesota don't grow out of nowhere. And there is a need for venture capital to get these small companies started. There's a need for support as these companies are trying to grow. We had a chance last year to take four small companies out to Washington, D.C. to work with our congressional delegation on trying to help the FDA understand some of the problems that are created by the way that clinical trials are run and the inability that we have in terms of getting Medicare and Medicaid to pay for clinical trials. It was really interesting as we sat around the table with four CEOs of four small companies, all less than 10 employees, to find out that all four of them had worked together at one of the big four at different times, but they'd never all worked together in the same place. So when Don talks about the interconnectedness of all of these organizations, it really is there. And these are companies that have the potential to have very, very rapid growth in the future. I know this is very broad overbrush and you're pressed for time today. We will have a full legislative agenda that's many pages long, and we look forward to visiting with you, talking about the individual bills that are coming along as we work through this legislative session. Ms. Sandvig was here. She will be back in the room momentarily, but there's a press conference over in the Senate, a major health bill that she is running over to look at for us, and we'll be back. But if you have any questions about the materials here today or other things that we can help with, we would certainly ask you to contact us, and we will be in touch with you and the chair as we move forward. If there are questions, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, I'd be happy to take them. Other than that, I'll turn it back to Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I've got about another 30 seconds. Okay. Mr. Chair, representatives, one thing that I need to do, I need to back up. I would get in big trouble with a couple of people if I didn't go back just a little bit to this slide. It's the cover of our new directory, but it really sends a message. The message we're trying to send to people is that life, that heart in the middle, with a pacemaker design below it, also has a lot of interesting things that need to be done in touch with biology. So that green sprout over the top with the technology of the hard technology underneath it, and the life of that heartbeat is really important for us to remember as we talk about all this, because it is all interconnected. It just plain is, from the agricultural to the educational to the lead wire that's manufactured down in Lakeville to whatever. All of that is extremely important to tend as we go through all of this. Okay. That is the end of my presentation, Mr. Chair. If there are any questions, otherwise we can move on to Mr. Wallstrom, but we'll both be available for questions at the end.
Representative Pepin?
Mr. Gerhardt, first of all, I'd like to thank you on behalf of all the work that you do, and wanted to let you know that 1 week ago today, as I was getting sworn into office, at the same time my dad was getting life-saving stents from Boston Scientific, which ironically I also represent. So, you know, on behalf of the people I represent and those of us in Minnesota who are benefiting from these life-saving products, thank you. And I do have a question too. My question is, I've heard some buzz about expanding bioscience zones, perhaps in St. Cloud and whatnot. And I wanted to maybe get your perspective on what you think that maybe kind of diluting the focus and making the biozones expand throughout the state, what you think about that. Does that help the industry, or does it make more sense to keep them concentrated in Rochester, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, where they currently are?
Sure. We think that there's been some good things that have happened in the biozones in the past, and that they have some really healthy applications. At the same time, it may be really a good time right now to take a look at them and to define them a little more clearly on what they need to be and how they should qualify. I think they need some work on that definition, but I think they've done some good things, especially in those two areas that you talk about, those two geographies that you're talking about.
Well, thank you. I've got a question, but just to direct to Representative Pepin. Actually, I've been working on trying to find a couple of representatives that would be delighted to work on getting a little bit more direction for the biozones. And I'll find you a Democratic partner to work with on this particular issue and on this committee. And
I'm not choosy. I'll pick a Republican partner, too.
Well, I will tell you that is a good humor, but I think I want the committee to understand that I want this to be a bipartisan committee. I hope there's always room for partisanship at a state legislature, but this committee really focuses on making Minnesota a better place for people to work and to live. So I've got one in mind, and I will be sending that person over to you.
Thank you.
Actually, I do have a question, a couple of them. In the layoffs that were announced this past week, those 500 scientists and business people, is your organization working with them to maybe take the ideas that they were working on? Because what it seems is that Boston Scientific is the one that made the layoff. They are concentrating on apparently four core issues is what they want to go to. Is your organization working with those that are being laid off to go with the other 10 or 20 ideas that they had in the hopper and bring those to corporate fruition here in the state of Minnesota?
Part of our legislative agenda will look towards that, of the potential of spinning out ideas like that into newer companies that would not be inside the large companies. There's a couple of other things related to your question too. I just talked to one of the VPs at Boston Scientific yesterday because I didn't know about the layoffs till yesterday, so I'm going to be talking to him next week to see what are the kinds of things we can help with and finding new jobs or connecting with companies around here that might need the workers. But the ideas, more than likely, there will be some ideas spun out into new companies. More than likely. But I don't have control of that, but more than I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I've got one other question here, and maybe this is not the time, but I see that you have Alley Ventures, a venture capital.
Yes.
Venture fund. Could you just spend a minute telling us what you're trying to do and how you envision it going?
Well, it hasn't gone the way we originally envisioned it, because early stage capital for these small companies is extremely hard to find. So we do not have that fund funded yet. It is extremely important that we get some kind of, I'll call it venture, angel, or early stage funding for small companies in our state. Dale Wallstrom will be talking that the number of the creation of small companies is on a decline in the state, where 20 years ago it was going like this. That's another indicator that we have some problems. So our intent is that Alley Ventures become a funding source, a finder of money for small companies. There has a lot of work to be done on it yet, but it is ready to go to help small companies, but it has not been funded because of that difficulty.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Gerhardt, for being here. You have indicated a couple of times that there are trends or indicators that the industry is facing some challenges going forward. Could you just list those out a bit more in a single file?
Mr. Wallstrom has great data behind it, and he'll be talking directly to those points. Mr. Chair, could I make one more comment? The importance on the economic side, if you ever want to see why we fight so hard to keep these industries going, think about Boston Scientific. Even though they're going through that layoff, that may be cyclical, maybe some of it isn't cyclical. Companies do move up and down. But if you ever want to have an image of what makes this state so so neat for this industry to be such an important part of it, is go to the shift change of Boston Scientific at about 2:30 in the afternoon. If you want to see Minnesota immediately turn into looking like New York City in gender and race and people who work on the production line, Boston Scientific has maintained a major part of its manufacturing here in Minnesota. Just go up there sometime. It's an incredible, incredible opportunity to see what really does happen when things are working right. So thank you for your time, Mr. Chair. Representatives, we really appreciate it, and I'll be available with Dale for questions after he's done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, good morning.
I'd like to introduce myself first. My name is Dale Wallstrom. I am the current chairman of the board for an organization called Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota. I am recently retired from Medtronic. I was born and raised in west central Minnesota by Pelican Rapids, if any of you are familiar with that area. And I'll turn over to Gail to introduce herself.
Hello, my name is Gail O'Kane. I work full-time for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities as the Bioscience Industry Specialist. But I'm testifying today on behalf of the Biobusiness Alliance as a board member. And I'll be talking a little bit about an educational initiative that I'm coordinating on behalf of the Alliance.
Thank you. Proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Biobusiness Alliance, and I believe you have in your packet a non-colored copy of the presentation. There's a couple slides that I've added, which I'll point out when I get there, that might add a little bit more clarity. I didn't think of that until this morning, so I apologize. But if you'd like those, you can have them. The Biobusiness Alliance is a nonprofit, 501c3. We are a collaborative effort between the Minnesota companies, universities, state governments, and healthcare institutions. We are, in effect, a second phase of the Governor's Council on Biosciences, which was started about 4 years ago, for those of you who are maybe familiar with that. 2 years ago, this last July, Mr. Gerhardt received a call from the governor asking if he would try to find somebody who would be willing to try to privatize put a plan behind the recommendations that were provided by that initial council. So, in effect, you could think of us as an organization that is dedicated to determining how, or creation of a roadmap for how we could deal with the biosciences in the state. We are, as I mentioned, a group of individuals from the various sectors. We believe strongly that this is not something state government alone can fix. It's not something that the university systems can fix or the private sector can fix or advance. It's something that we can only do if we hold hands and go at it together. So we have a collaboration amongst all those different sectors, and what we are doing is the way we approached the problem. If we started out with the formation of a board of directors. And that board settled on three strategic initiatives that we would undertake. The first one being a statewide assessment to try to get hard data to look at what is the actual status of what we call biobusiness in the state of Minnesota as compared to other states that we looked at. The second is the creation of a long-term strategic roadmap, which we call Destination 2025. And the third is the creation of a support network, which we call the Biobusiness Resource Network, which is a network that actually has two functions. One is to support entrepreneurs that want to start up here in the state, companies that may want to move here from other states, or companies that may want to expand here, where just and that's a collaboration between the dean organization, the various universities, and again, private individuals and companies, private sector people. We also, in that area, take on major initiatives, major programs from a program management perspective, and that's why Gail is here. We'll give you a sample of one of those when we get to that point of the presentation. In effect, though, we're a group of citizens who believe that bioscience is on the edge of a change in the world, and we need to be ready for it. And in fact, the analogy we use is that if we look back 20 years ago at where computer science was, and think about how computer science has changed our lives, all of our lives in every aspect, if we look forward 20 to 30 years from now, the biosciences will have the same dramatic impact on our lives. We use the phrase biobusiness, and we did that because we're trying to look at not just the specific science or bioscience-based jobs, but actually the whole job creation mechanism that goes along with the focus on bioscience and biotechnology. We also want to be able to use the NAICS code, the national, the census data coming out of federal government, because it's the best data to look at to try to get a general overview of the various industry sectors. When we talk about bioscience and the focus, our focus is, an area of biobusiness that basically represents these five different groupings. Medical device, which I think is clear what that is. R&D and life sciences is needs a little explanation. The R&D and life sciences sector is one that focuses mainly on the commercialization or the manipulation, the working with cells and genes and things like that. It is a high technology. It is the basis for many of the new pharmaceuticals that are being developed. It's a basis for what are called biologics. It's also the basis of base knowledge for things like renewable fuels, biopolymers, all the agricultural utilization research activities that AURI, who you may be familiar with, is involved with. That core science is driven out of that area. Pharmaceuticals is another sector, agribio and bioindustrial, which is more focused on production of specifically things like ethanol and biodiesel and materials. And then medical and diagnostic laboratories, which are the diagnostics, et cetera. And things like imaging and the like. Those five categories, when we talk about biobusiness, that's what we're talking about. And that's the core. This state is exceptionally strong in the area of medical device, and agribio and bioindustrial. And we'll get into some of the data. But what I'm going to do now for the rest of this is just kind of set the tone with some information, some numbers. So please feel free to interrupt if you like. This first slide you do not have, and I apologize for that. There's two slides coming up now that you don't have, because I just thought this morning when I was setting up that it might add value to understanding why this is receiving so much focus right now. If this is specifically this slide is recently published by Harvard Business School, last spring actually, and it demonstrates that starting way back in the 70s and 80s, the growth of sales or revenue, money that was in industry that was generated, had been growing quite dramatically. In fact, the latest data I saw showed it's now up close to $50 billion if you add in not only public but also privately traded biotech companies. But the most important part of the graph is the bottom one, which is the demonstration of profitability. That curve of showing the growth and going from being negative or flat to negative is relatively recent. In fact, it's in the 2002, 2003, 2004 time frame that it has begun to become profitable. And this is very similar to what we found in the dot-com era when we had a lot of dot-com companies that started up. They made the big dot-com bust. Okay, but those companies that found a business model that worked, those companies became very profitable, and then other companies began to mimic or to copy that model. That's what's happening right now in this industry. Some business models have become successful after years of building infrastructure and education and whatnot, and as a result of that, the industry is growing, and it's getting attracting tremendous investment. The other feature that the biotech and bioscience industry is unique, not totally unique, but pretty unique in is the area of economic development, is that the second slide demonstrates that and this is data recently released by Battelle Corporation, that for every one job that's created in the area of biotech or bioscience, there's about 5.7 jobs that are created to support that. And those are jobs that range from, as Don Gerhardt alluded to, things like production, metal or machine manufacturing, marketing, engineering, etc. There's an array of support functions that are necessary to support that. Okay, now I'm going to move into some data. And this is data that came out of the assessment. The assessment was conducted by two independent organizations that we hired about over a year ago. It took over a year to collect this information. And by the way, I might add that on our website, there's a complete report. I'm only going to show you a few slides today. This is, again, based on our industry sector. This first section is only on industry, and it's on data primarily coming from 1997 to 2002, which is the last period of federal census data that was available. We looked at 10 other states, and what limited us there was time and money, because it's quite expensive and time consuming to dig through the information. But to the net of this, you always see Minnesota on the left-hand side in this particular situation for those five categories that was in the previous slide. The only state of the 11 states that we looked at that lost employment in this time frame was Minnesota. And we dropped from about 31,000 to about 28,000 jobs that could be clearly identified in this area. The next slide is an index. It's an index that allows us to look at different size economies. You can compare a state like Minnesota to a state like Iowa or California. And the way these indexes are calculated is if you take, you say Minnesota is 10% of the workforce and 10% of the population that's employed in this industry is employed here, then you divide those two together and you get an index of 1.0. So in effect, you could say wherever you see that line of 1.0, that's what you would expect to see for a state of their size. So you notice that in this situation, in the total of those five categories, we are about average. We're a little bit low in area of number of companies. As you look across, you can see that they range, other states we looked at range from being better to worse than where we are. Moving forward now into looking specifically at one of those five boxes, which is area medical device, you'll notice there again that this is an index, and you'll also notice that there we are a mega center. We are a very strong medical device center. Specifically, again, you'll notice that in the orange line that we're a little bit, we're above average, but we're not way above average in a number of companies. You'll notice that the only other economy that we looked at that's more dependent on medical devices than we are is actually Utah. California by far is the biggest, although they're not in terms of dependency, they are in terms of size, absolute numbers. This is the category of R&D and life sciences. It's that area I mentioned before, which is sort of the basis of the biotechnology movement. This is important for two reasons. Number one, it's an area of high growth, and you'll notice that in countries like California, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Washington, Ohio, Wisconsin, you'll notice tremendous job growth in that area. It's an area of high growth. It's also an area that's important to us, and it is, in fact, the primary reason that the BioBusiness Alliance was formed. And Don Gerhardt mentioned several times this concept of convergence. When we think about convergence, it's the blending or the coming together of previously historically dissimilar technologies. So like in the past, medical devices and pharmaceutical were separate and biotechnology was separate. But even in today's world, if you look at the pharmaceutical industry, I don't know the exact number, but the last number I saw, somewhere around 26% of the latest drugs that were approved in the United States were actually biotechnology-based pharmaceuticals. But if you went back 10 years ago, that number would be zero. So that movement and the convergence of traditional pharmaceuticals with biotechnology is occurring quite rapidly. In the area of medical devices and biotechnology, it has begun. Boston Scientific, Medtronic, all our local companies are working in that area right now. You see it in the form of drug-eluting stents or convergent products, or what they're called, actually. Why that's important to us is that in order for, if you look at these other states, take California, specifically the Bay Area and L.A., or the Boston area of Massachusetts, these areas have very strong medical device industries and very strong biotech industries. And as you can see, their growth in this area is also very strong, as is their growth in total job growth. We feel this is an area of concern for us because we do believe that over the next 5 to 20 years, we'll see a very large convergence of biotechnology into the medical device arena. And at this moment in time, Minnesota, with the loss of jobs that just occurred at 3M, you might have noted, or there were 600 jobs that left 3M, I don't know the exact number, but I know in the pharmaceutical Minnesota base, there's about 600 employees, and some of that, they've sold that division, and many of those jobs will leave. If all 600 of those left, we would be just a little bit bigger than Utah. in terms of our biotech capability, and we would be smaller than Iowa. So it's an area of concern for us because of this issue of convergence. On a more positive note, we didn't believe these numbers when we saw them, so we had the people go back. We went back and took a second look, tried to understand what was happening, how could we be losing jobs. And you might recall that this data is from 1997 to 2002, and in fact, in 2002 was sort of a dip in the medical device industry. It was a time when there was a lack of growth. And in that time frame, we since that time frame, 2002, it has actually turned around. We lost 3,000 jobs between 1997 and 2002. And then from 2002 to 2005, depending on which numbers you look at it, our job growth has been somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 jobs in net total. I want to be clear that if you look at our big companies are hiring, and Don Gerhardt alluded to this earlier in his presentation. In the same time frame, we went and looked at a few of the larger companies, and those companies have been adding, you know, thousands of employees. Where the job loss has occurred is in the startups and small companies. Many of the companies have had to move out of state to get funding, those kinds of things. So that's an area of focus that we need to pay close attention to. We threw this slide in here to kind of give you a sense of, in this area of medical devices, pharmaceuticals, medical device, agrobio, bioindustrial, and the R&D and life sciences. Again, that yellow and the green covers a lot of the renewable products here in that yellow and green. That's an extremely important area for us, a high growth area for us. But in terms of absolute numbers of jobs right now, about 77, or as of 2002, about 78% of the bioscience-based jobs in the state were in the medical device area. And that's why when you see a decline in medical devices, we really feel it here in this state. As you contrast that to a general profile of the United States, you can see our dependency. We obviously want to grow and strengthen all these other areas as well. This is where those jobs, generally speaking, these companies are located that we assessed. This slide is just to give you a little clarity, because you hear us talk periodically as we go forward about white, green, red, and blue. Mainly you hear us talk about white, green, and red technology. It's a categorization system that's actually based on a European approach. White is dead plants. It's taking plants such as corn and processing it into ethanol, or soybeans and processing it into diesel. Green is growing, it's food, it's plant engineering, those kinds of things. And red technology is dealing with blood, so it's animal and human, mostly human in our discussion, but also quite a lot of animals specifically, and as one example, Worthington is really strong in that area. That's a setup for this slide. This is a good news slide, and this is a slide that we want to make sure you. I want to make sure you understand. This slide is in this assessment we looked at what are our skills and where's our capabilities, and we tried to overlap the volume of people and capabilities that we have. So if you look at the red, that represents the red technology. Green represents green, and the gray represents white, because white doesn't show up well in white. So the gray is the white. And when you look at those, the good news in this is that we have most of the skills that we have in the state are transferable. So this issue of convergence, we don't want to give you the message that we're so far behind in this area of R&D and life sciences, we can't catch up. The reality is that in this area, when we assessed this area, we looked not only at the industrial sector, we also looked at the academic sector. And in our academic sector is very strong and very capable. It's not growing as fast as it needs to grow, and you probably saw that in the paper on this weekend. It's strong, it's capable, and it has tremendous value. Where we are, and the skills that are coming out of there are transferable. So, and I'm going to give an example. It's the best one I've seen, actually. So for those of you who heard this before, I apologize, but I think it's such a great example. And there's a company that I visited in Japan about 2 months ago. They are a laser weld company. They're a company that does laser welding for metals and polymers. About 15 years ago, when the high reliability electronics began to enter the market, they went out and did investigative work and found out that they could take their core technology of laser welding, and they could use that to crystallize ceramics to make high-grade electronic equipment. When Japan started to invest so heavily in biotechnology, they were concerned that they were going to get left behind because that wasn't one of their core competencies, the same thing that we hear from many of our companies. We don't do biotech, we do something else. They went out and did some research and found that by changing the energy density and the waveform of their laser beam, that they could actually take that same technology and use it to crystallize proteins, which is the basis of biotechnology. So we are now working with them as potentially an entry site for bringing their technology to the United States through Minnesota. We're not sure we'll get them, but we would really like to have them because it's enabling technology that's very important to us. That's an example of the things that Gail will be talking about. How do we re-educate our population? How do we re-educate our people, our students rather, so they can understand that their core competencies don't need to be thrown away. They just need to add to them in order to take advantage of what it is we need to do. These are, Don talked about convergence. These are some examples of convergence. Animal husbandry, human health. You can look at these ag and processing to get biofuels and biopackaging materials. High growth arena, very high growth area of intense focus for us. At the end of this, I'll just summarize this quickly. This is to end the discussion of statewide assessment. We have we walked away from that assessment with some what I want to call low-hanging fruit because that implies it's simple to do, but we walked away with some things we recognize we need to do immediately, and that's what these are while we go into our long-term planning process, and those are the following. One is catalyze and support startup of new businesses, so that's in medical, specifically medical devices, because that's an area where we had job loss in the startup, the small company area, etc. We're doing that through two mechanisms. We're looking at it from the perspective of two points at this moment. One is the transfer from the academic sector into the commercialization arm in the private sector. And you'll hear a lot of that as an academic session, or sorry, as a legislative session moves forward. And the other is we're working to try to pick up on Representative Mahoney's comments. We are looking at how do we spin out non-commercialized investments from the private sector that could become jobs in a relatively short period of time if we were successful with that. Number two, and to catalyze R&D in the life sciences. And again, just to repeat myself a little bit, this is an area that we're not strong in. We're weak in the commercialization in this area. Again, that's the area that we're a little bit bigger than Utah. This is a critical area because of the convergence issue. Number one, we want to support companies the same as we do in medical devices. And number two, though, which is different than devices, we want to work on culture and create an environment that will support this industry. We don't have that today. And there's lots going on, and we'll talk more about that through the course of the legislative session. And then number three, we're going to create a plan for sustainable renewable industry. You are all probably quite familiar with the renewable industry in the state and what a tremendous asset it is and how quickly it's moving and how much focus it is getting. In working with the industry representatives in that area, the one thing that we've agreed on that they could use help in that we are helping them with is the formation of a modeling capability that allows us to develop a predictive systems of looking at how that industry will evolve over the next 5 to 20 years, and what would we need to do to make sure that what we invest in is sustainable over time. So we're working closely to do that, and we'll come back with that later. Okay, the next two steps for us is what we call destination, because what I just finished now is the assessment and all that data. The next two are things we're working on today. One is Destination 2025, and the second is the Biobusiness Resource Network, and I mentioned those before. 2025 is our 20-year plan process with a 5-year, 10-year, 15, and 20-year sub-plans. We have that plan is, that process is working. We have a and it's working quite rapidly right now. Our goal is to establish roadmaps that will help to define how we believe as a consortium of academic, government, and private sector people, we need to move forward to ensure the strength in the biobusiness industry and to establish specific ways to measure that and guide that. I'm not going to go through this. You have it in your slide. This process is in place at the Core Governance Council. We have an advisory board. We have a strategy build committee that is coming together right now. There's about 150 people working on that at the moment. But the only thing I wanted to point out to you is that down at the bottom are sort of the working teams. We've divided this industry into seven different markets: renewable energy, medical devices, and pharmaceuticals are the first three that we will work on. Renewable energy is the one that we're working on right now. That team has been kicked off. As I mentioned, there's about 150 people working on that today. We will issue our first five-year plan in draft form in the summer. In about 3 months, we will kick off the medical device team. We're forming that as we speak. And about 3 months after that, we will kick off what we call the pharmaceutical and the biologics team. Each of these, as I mentioned, will be chartered with putting together a 5, 10, and 15, and 20-year document to help create a roadmap. Across the bottom are what we call the enabling technologies. You'll hear a lot about these as the legislative session goes on. There's a request for investment in things like nanotechnology, proteomics, and all the other things. Just to be clear, these are all enabling technologies. You can't do biotechnology unless you have a strong nanotech or bioinformatic capability. It's like the basis of which you can establish these industry segments. So each of these areas, we will be working with the groups that are advocating for them right now to help understand better how to present them in a contextual manner. Because our goal, if you step back and you look at everything we're trying to do with Destination 2025, is give you context. Help not just you, not just the committee, although you're definitely a targeted organization that we want to help provide insight into, but just in general the state and the constituents of the state. Because I don't know how you feel, but I've worked in this industry now for almost 30 years, and I still get confused about things because there's so much new knowledge that's developed every day, it's almost impossible to keep up. The last thing I'm going to comment on before I turn over to Gail is what we call the BRN, the Biobusiness Resource Network. That's that resource network of companies and individuals across the state and we're focusing on two things. One is business development, and the other is infrastructure and environmental projects. Currently, in the business development arm of that organization is not in place yet. Even though we're not officially open for business, we are currently entertaining 42 requests for help. Those requests for help are quite geographically distributed. We're working with a company from Australia, a couple from Japan, one from Korea, six from Scandinavia, three from other U.S. states, and not mentioned here, but we're also supporting three startup companies here in Minnesota itself. Those are all just examples of people who want to, organizations that want to come here because of what we offer. And we think that's very critical. We're also supporting a group of large programs, large projects, things like the life science community. I'm not going to talk about large programs, large projects, things like the life science community. I'm not going to talk about that today, but it's an actual statewide community where we're working closely with people like Dr. Frank Serra, Dr. Tim McKay, Dr. Linda Baer, Dr. Bob Elby, as well as different cities around the state, a couple of nonprofits, to create and especially organizations such as Life Science Alley and other membership orgs around the state as well. But what we're trying to do there is to create a network of integrated capabilities that we can have access to and can spread things around. But we'll share that in more detail later. We're also supporting acceleration incubation, which Don Garrett mentioned. It's really, really critical. And then Gail will talk about biosciences and our education industry partnership as an example of something that is the furthest along. We're also, as I mentioned before, the system dynamics modeling and early phase funding that Don talked about. So with that, I'm going to stop and let Gail go into detail a bit more about and give you an example of what these projects and these programs are about. So, Gail.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives, for having me speak here today. At the heart of why biosciences is so important.
Could I just interrupt and ask you to identify yourself for the record?
Okay. Gail O'Kane from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm here on behalf of the BioBusiness Alliance, where I am a board member. Okay. At the heart of why we're so concerned with biosciences in Minnesota and in other states that we're competing with is because of jobs. A lot of jobs and good jobs. We expect there will be an explosion in job growth across the country and across the world in people that are going to be fueling these bioscience companies and these innovations. These jobs are expected to be very good jobs. As some have alluded to this today, $65,000 is the average wage for a bioscience worker. That's 26,000 more than the average private sector wage. So these are very good jobs, and they, as it has been said before, are open to people from across the educational spectrum. The BioBusiness Alliance is so powerful because it brings together people from academia, from the private sector industry, and from the government to really who are passionate about advancing the biosciences, that recognize its promise, and really have some resources they can bring to bear on solving the problem. But they can get way more bang for their buck if they do it together. And there's been a recognition of that, and the BioBusiness Alliance has been very powerful because of that in terms of getting achieving some of what they're trying to do. Similarly, we recognize, those of us who are concerned primarily about education and workforce development, recognize that there are a lot of people and a lot of resources across the state that were advancing bioscience education, but that it was happening in pockets and in clusters. And people really weren't talking to each other. Not only were they not working together, they didn't even know each other existed. And so what we proposed to do through the BioBusiness Alliance was to create this organization called the Biosciences Education Industry Partnership Council. And we did create this in June of this past year, and this was the original vision of it, and we adhered pretty closely to that original vision. The goal was to bring people from the University of Minnesota, Minsky, and private colleges who really hadn't been speaking together about this together into the same room. But not just that, we hadn't also, not only was higher education not speaking among themselves, but we weren't speaking to K-12 in a kind of formalized way. And so this was to bring all of education together, but not just that. All of education also wasn't talking to industry. Sure, one college here had a great partnership with this particular company there, but we just didn't have an aggregated way of really sharing information and sharing resources. So this was the idea behind the Biosciences Education and Industry Partnership Council. This group has now been meeting monthly since June, and we have three objectives, and you can go on to the next slide. And those objectives are to create an ongoing dialogue between education and industry, so about current and future workforce needs that relate to the biosciences. And the idea here is that, as I said, we really weren't speaking as one, and if we wanted to, for any one institution to try to get a fix on what were the workforce needs were, we have to go to individual companies. Well, now we have many of those companies at the table talking to us, and not only is it easier for higher education, but it's easier for industry, too, because they might not know, I have this workforce challenge. Is the U of M or a private college or one of the Minsky institutions most suited to helping me with this problem? Well, now they can come and talk to us all in one place, and we can work together to figure out which one or two or three of us could help them best. Another aspect is to create an environment where partnerships can develop. So what we foresee is it won't always be the case that we embark upon projects as a group, but rather it's going to be a meeting place so that people that weren't meeting previously could meet and spin out and work on a project independently. So let me give you an example of this. It's been identified by industry that there's a real gap in understanding of regulatory affairs among graduates of higher education institutions. And in fact, if a person graduates with a biology degree or a chemistry chemistry degree from a four-year institution here, they typically don't really understand that the FDA exists. And it takes about a year, we're told, by industry to take a biology bachelor's degree student and really get them up to speed on dealing in a regulated environment. And so one solution we could foresee to this problem is to work across University of Minnesota, MinSU institutions, and private colleges to create a core class that could be offered in any one of those institutions in regulatory affairs. We could each do it separately, but wouldn't it be so much better and cost-effective and create much more of a quality project if we did it working together with industry at the table? So that's one way we might work alone. There are individual issues that are high-demand areas which it might make more sense for one institution to work with one or a group of companies on, and that would be more of a spin-out project of this group. So a third objective is to raise public awareness about the importance of bioscience education and really to have a cadre of industry people that really understand how all the pieces fit together. They understand how K-12 and the higher education institutions are or are not working together to advance science education. They understand when we're asked at MinSU, how does this initiative fit with the U of M? We'll be able to not only have an answer for them, but we'll have industry people that can kind of help us articulate that and really can help us focus that on an answer to that question. So those are the broad objectives. Gail, you can go on to the next slide. And for several months now, we've been meeting as a group, and we've been educating ourselves about what the issues are and getting to know each other as a group. But we've just launched three action teams, and this is how our activities will actually turn into real products. And one of these action teams is going to focus on K-12 education and outreach. And we have people from that work in K-12, people that work in industry that are passionate about K-12 education, the person who runs educational initiatives for the Medtronic Foundation is part of this team. So it's a real great group of individuals. A second group is going to focus on higher education curriculum and pathways. And what that is kind of like the description I just told you about regulatory affairs or other high-demand curriculum areas. And also trying to create pathways for students where we're really thinking about students as a customer and thinking about, well, how would you go from a two-year program to a four-year program to a master's program? Can we make that easier for people so people can enter and exit wherever they need to on the educational continuum? And it's not really them going to, you know, having to really sort things out for themselves so on their own. The third piece and the last piece that I'll talk about is data collection and dissemination. We do not, as a whole in the state, know what the overall workforce needs are in Minnesota with regard to the biosciences. The standard classifications and categories in which the government collects data are really not sufficient to give us the level of detail higher education or K-12 need to understand where the workforce gaps are. And so this group will work on workforce gap analyses. We'll work on, we actually don't even have any one place that someone can go if they're thinking of getting into the biosciences industry, whether you're a high school student or a career changer that just hears this buzz about biosciences, well, where can I get educated? There's no one-stop shop, no one web page, no one brochure you can read to say, well, what are my various higher educational options? What are the various programs? So the low-hanging fruit for us is to, as a first pass, is to develop one document that says what all of these different educational programs are, regardless of whether it's MinSU, the private colleges, or U of M. So those are the kinds of activities that we're going to pursue as a group. And I will just say that there are people out there who are hungry for this information. As a group, we just held our first public meeting a month ago where we had people from 3M, Medtronic, PDL Biopharma, and other large companies and small companies talking about what their workforce needs were. And we decided that this was initially going to be just one of our regular meetings of the council, and we said, well, it's a shame. I think there'd be a lot of people that would want to hear about this. So we said, well, we won't market it, but let's just tell our networks that, you know, they're people that we know that they can come as guests and they're welcome to come.
Well, this is okay. And Ms. Kane, if speaking about hunger, I'm just wondering if there's anyone that's hungry to ask a question because we only have about 3 minutes left.
Okay. The last thing I'll say is 100 people came to that event. So okay. There is really a hunger for that, and I'll close with that.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
Representative Mahoney. I would like to ask if you have had much discussion about
the need for entrepreneurial training. One of the things that our workforce development event in Rochester that was held about a month ago was in talking in this about this particular area, is that there simply are not enough individuals ready and trained to be those entrepreneurs that might have the science and business background to go forward. Have you addressed that at all, or could you?
It's definitely been a discussion in our meetings, and it's something that we could address both at the K-12 level, where there are great models nationally of educational programs for kids to get them excited about and understanding entrepreneurship, or at the higher education level. One of the people on our council is former Representative Lynn Osterman, and that was kind of a particular area of interest of hers that she brought up at one of our fall meetings, and something that we're probably going to pursue in the future.
Any other questions today? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. Just a question on, you talk about this convergence. How are our kind of larger companies, medical device companies, do you have any sense of how they're doing in that area, or what they're focusing on? I mean, are they on top of this issue?
Yeah, I'm not speaking for any of the companies, but every company is aware of the issue, and they all have their own internal programs that they're working on, which are not public, obviously. But the last 5 years have yielded enough positive results that I would doubt that there's any company in the state who isn't plugged into the fact that this is something that is either going to be could damage their market if they don't figure out a way to participate in it, or they will, or they already are there. One point I want to make, though, that's a very important point, is that the companies will figure out a way to deal with this. The mecca sites for this right now are the Bay Area, the Boston area, North Carolina, and now Wisconsin in the Madison area are really starting to become noted areas for growth in this area. They will have to go to where the knowledge is. So the fact that our companies will do well does not mean that the state will do well. And that's the core of our message. So I think that's the point that Don was making as well. We have to be aware of that and manage that and make them want to stay here or come here to get it like these. Yeah, I'll stop there.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow, have we seen any of that yet?
That's right.
Have we seen any of that yet? In terms of like our big medical device companies, where they're actually, some of their work is going to those other mecca areas?
Well, again, you know, a lot of that, what companies do internally, what they do internally in terms of investment is not public, but I do know that there's a lot of money being put into different geographies around the world trying to understand how to participate in this. As an example, in my past life, you know, I came on Medtronic, and we were very interested in pacing and defibrillation, obviously, because that's what we do. And I have seen animals that are powered by biopacemakers in other states and other countries, and all the companies are aware of that.
Representative Thiessen, your question, I think, to clarify it was, have we seen any of the big bio industries in the state of Minnesota move their manufacturing facilities outside of the state of Minnesota?
Right now, the company, we don't have big bio. That's why we're a little bit bigger than Iowa. You know, or sorry, a little bit bigger than Utah, rather,
I could rephrase that as biomedical device, then. I mean, because that is our big industry here. Have we seen the medical device industry start moving some of their things out?
I'm not trying to shield the answer. It's just I don't have a good answer. I mean, obviously the what happened now with guidance, the recent announcement, there's some implications of that. There's also growth in other communities around the world. And in fact, you can look at the grant literature that was in the paper about 6-8 months ago.
Well, we've got about 30 seconds if you can answer that quickly, and I've got to make an introduction, and then we're going to adjourn for the day.
Mr. Chair, Gail can answer that just because of where he has been working. I've been watching a lot of it, and yes, it is moving. It's not moving wholesale, but certain parts of it move, partly because of strategic geographic placement. But yes, absolutely.
Thank you. That's going to have to take it for the day because we have to leave the room at 11:30 and we're a couple minutes late. I did want to introduce the one of the audience members is from Deed, and he's working in the bio industry at Deed, and is so Kevin McKenna, and I'm sure he'll be touching base with everybody on the committee, and you'll be able to get a hold of him. I want to thank you for coming today. I appreciate the information. I suspect with some thought we're all going to have a whole lot more questions, so we all know how to get a hold of you, and I hope we take advantage of you as a resource. And with that, the committee is adjourned for the day. Again, thank you.